Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. Welcome into another edition. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Look forward to Tuesdays all the time. Typically, I'm joined by Vinny Rondinelli in studio. Vinny unable to be in studio, but that's okay. We're going to talk over the phone. He'll join us next segment here on Drive Time Sports. We'll spend the bulk of the show talking about the NFL gearing up for Week 11, which kicks off Thursday night with a marquee matchup here on KOAL, Seattle and Arizona. Right now, Seattle in a three-way tie for the lead in the NFC West, but they've now lost two consecutive games. Arizona, they win a thriller on Sunday. Kyler Murray, little Murray magic to the end zone on a Hail Mary to DeAndre Hopkins. They're now tied with the Los Angeles Rams, who have the tiebreaker on Seattle, but the Cardinals have the tiebreaker on the Rams. NFC West showdown coming up this Thursday. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about some of the struggles as we move into Week 11. Are there any coaches on the hot seat? There are plenty. How many coaching jobs may become available the day after the season, which is approaching? And we got a month and a half left in the season. That is it. So we'll talk about that again here on Football Tuesday. However, there are a lot of other storylines circulating around the national sports scene, and this one is fairly significant, and it takes us to the world of baseball. Theo Epstein, the architect behind the Chicago Cubs championship season in 2016, he's stepping down after nine seasons as president of baseball operations with the Cubs. And look, I don't think we can overstate the importance of Theo Epstein in this century for baseball. I mean, I'm serious when I say that. I know we're only 20 years into this century, but when you look at what he has accomplished in a 20-year span, it's incredible. Here's a guy that's 46 years old. He was the architect of the Boston Red Sox championship in 2004 and 2006. Leaves San Diego, he goes to Boston. He gets the Boston job because Billy Beane decides to stay put in Oakland. So Theo gets the job. And Theo made it work. And when the Red Sox won the World Series in 2004, that ends one of the longest three droughts for a World Series ever in Major League Baseball. Theo's in Boston for 10 years. He's approaching the 11th year, final year of his contract. He steps away. He joins the Chicago Cubs. And in 2016, what happens? He ends another one of the three longest World Series droughts ever in Major League Baseball. So he's responsible for ending two of three of the longest World Series droughts we have ever seen. And when you look at the franchises that he managed to turn around, the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago Cubs, I don't know that it gets more historical than that. I mean, these are national brands that could not win a World Series. And Theo did that. And Theo kind of changed his own logic along the way. I was reading a story that when he was with San Diego, they didn't look at stats when it came to drafting players. They didn't look at that. Theo kind of implemented that. And when he got the job in Boston, a lot of old baseball heads, they were worried. Because Theo's going to have his own, he's going to have his own logic. He's going to have his own way. And baseball was starting to trend in a different direction. He turned the Red Sox around. And then Theo leaves on his own terms. This is what he always does. He's going into the final year of his contract in Boston. He wants to leave on his own terms. He does that. But when I've researched this guy for the last 10 to 15 years because I'm fascinated by the business aspect of the game. And one of the things that Theo said in Boston that was so profound, he saw the impact that a World Series championship left on the city of Boston. And he thought the only other city where we could accomplish that would be Chicago. Remember, the Cubs hadn't won a World Series in 100 years. So he goes to Chicago, and what happens? He turns him into a World Series champion. But again, he leaves on his own term. He doesn't wait for his contract to expire. And as far as the reports, Theo may step away from baseball for a year, and then he's interested in a third chapter. I can throw a team out there for you right now. What about the New York Mets? That's legitimate, right? I think the Mets will call, but I'm curious to see where Theo goes. Again, I don't think you can overstate the fact that this is one of the most important baseball figures that we have seen this century. And I think historically, it will look back that positive on Theo. When he's no longer around the game of baseball, when he decides he has accomplished all that he could accomplish, we will look back on this guy and say, wow. The architect of ending two of the three longest droughts in baseball history for a World Series championship, Theo has that on his resume. I'm not going to quite go out on a limb and say he's the Jerry West of Major League Baseball, because Jerry West created something in Los Angeles. He stuck with it. He went to Memphis, didn't win a championship, but he made him respectable. Goes to Golden State. The rest is history. Now he's with the Clippers. But Theo has been the lead architect behind it all. And I believe Jerry West is one of the greatest talent evaluators, or the greatest talent evaluator that we have ever seen for the game of basketball. Theo's up there for baseball. I'm telling you, in today's world, what this man has accomplished, it is incredible. It's a sad day if you're a Chicago Cub fan. And I'll tell you what's worrisome if you're a Cub fan as well. The last time Theo bailed, it was because management wouldn't support his vision for building a competitive team. And if that happened again, it's a huge indictment on Ricketts, the owner for the Cubs. Where does Chicago go from here? There's no more Joe Maddon. There's no more Theo Epstein. It's a bad day for Chicago Cubs baseball. I guarantee you that. Let's take a look at some of the other news that is floating around. We have to talk about the NBA and everything that's happening regarding trades. Big trades. New Orleans pulling off another big one last night. They're sending Drew Holiday to Milwaukee for a grip of picks. The Bucks have gone all in. And then the Bucks made a trade with Bogdanovich, bringing in Bogdanovich from Sacramento, not the Jazz, Bogdanovich from Sacramento. And so you look at the playmakers the Bucks have surrounded Giannis with. They have been by far the most active team since the NBA lifted the moratorium. And again, we're on the eve of the NBA draft. But some big, big things happening in Milwaukee. As far as another Eastern Conference team that was close, the runners-up in that conference, the Boston Celtics, they've been quiet, but they have agreed to push the deadline with Gordon Hayward for his player option back to Thursday. He was supposed to make the decision by 3 o'clock today, Mountain Time, and the Celtics have now extended that for another 2 days. That allows both sides to get a chance to really look at their options before Hayward needs to make a decision on his future. And the bottom line is, Gordon Hayward's not getting $34 million on the open market. There is absolutely no way that is going to happen. Hayward doesn't seem to be happy in Boston, and I'm telling you right now, the Celtics would be thrilled to get rid of that $34 million. You look at what he did last year, 17 points, six rebounds, four assists in 52 games. Shot 50% from the field, but then he suffered a grade 3 ankle sprain in game 1 of the first round against Philly. And that injury kept him out until midway through the Eastern Conference Finals. And so this has kind of been a reoccurring trend for Gordon Hayward. He can't stay healthy. I'm actually shocked that Hayward has not decided to opt in. But once you opt in, there's no way you're leaving Boston this season. Nobody's going to absorb that contract. So Thursday, we'll find out the fate of Gordon Hayward. It looks like we are moving closer and closer to a resolution in the James Harden saga as well. It is being reported by multiple outlets on Twitter that there is a verbal agreement that Houston and Brooklyn will work on a deal. Now, this deal will not include Kevin Durant. It will not include Kyrie Irving. And so Brooklyn would have, finally, their legitimate big three: Durant, Kyrie, and Harden. Could that big three work? And if that is the case, without including Kyrie in a deal, you know that Brooklyn's going to have to throw everything, the kitchen sink, at the Rockets. Because here's the kicker in this. James Harden can demand a trade all he wants. He's not in the final year of his contract. Houston has all the leverage in the world here. They do not have to deal James Harden. if Harden was in the final year of his contract, you'd have to act on this if you were the Rockets, because his value is going to dwindle more and more by the day. That's not the case. He is under team control for two more seasons. So I don't think the Rockets are in any hurry to get rid of him. And like we pointed out on the show yesterday, they're not moving the Russell Westbrook contract. That will not happen. Nobody is foolish enough to take that on. So this is where we're at right now. According to reports, Harden inching closer to getting to Brooklyn in a deal between the Rockets and the Nets. We'll keep an eye on that. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. We're going to pause for just a moment. A local sports update is coming your way. We'll also talk NFL football. Week 10 of the books last night. The Vikings picking up a win over the Chicago Bears. That's all straight ahead right here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAN. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now you open my eyes.
Here comes the quarterback, Burrow, looking for a block, and he got it up in the front by Hopkins into the end zone. Touchdown!
I feel like I'm going to lose my way.
It's Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. So much is happening, though, around the entire national scene that we have to stray away a little bit from football, but we have a segment right now dedicated to the NFL, and joining us as he does every Tuesday, we have Vinny Rondinelli, not in studio, instead Vinny joining us over the phone. And Vinny, I'll tell you, we finish up week 10, and things are really starting to get interesting. In the NFC, it appeared that that's where the races were going to be. I'm not quite sure that's the case following week 9.
Yeah, you know, you start this part of the season, you get in that last leg, Jordan, and you see people pull away, you see where weaknesses really are. You see where teams, you know, what they're struggling to fix and what they have to fix going down the home stretch, because you're getting in, you know, right here, the end of the year, you have them division games getting towards playoff time, and they're big. They're huge.
They really are, and we'll talk more about the standings here in just a moment, because you got to remember division records when you start talking about the playoff seeding and the way things will shape out. Vinny, before we do that, I want to stick with the AFC, and I want to talk about the Baltimore Ravens. This is a team that had very, very high expectations coming into the season. I don't know that anyone could have predicted that Pittsburgh would be the last unbeaten team. We started to maybe worry about Baltimore a little bit following a loss to the Chiefs. If you just looked at the box score, it didn't look that bad, but they were physically dominated on both sides of the ball. Then they nearly lose to Philly, they lose to Pittsburgh, they lose to New England, and they have massive, massive injuries that are starting to pile up. And as we go into week 11, you can't fix these problems. You just can't. I mean, Ronnie Stanley, he's gone. One of the best in the game. Out for the season with an ankle injury. He suffered that against Pittsburgh just a couple of weeks ago. Then they lose Nick Boyle for the remainder of the year. And you and I were talking off the cuff about DJ Fluker replacing Orlando Brown, who filled in for Stanley. I mean, when you look at what's happening in Baltimore right now, it goes well beyond just losing games late. It goes well beyond the struggles of Lamar Jackson. This is a team that is banged up as far as their front five and their front seven is concerned. And I just don't know how you fix that week 11.
Now, it's late in the season. You know, you get the feeling watching that game, Belichick, you know, you feel a little mojo coming on for New England and Baltimore losing it. And, you know, the weather's a factor, but the Baltimore, that's the team they want to be, Jordan. That's the team they want to be. The weather shouldn't have affected them like it would, say, another team. Say your Rams, you know, trying to get wide, boots, play action, throwing the ball. Baltimore's not built for that anyways. They're built for weather. You know, they're trying to be physical up front. They're trying to run the ball. Lamar Jackson doesn't want to throw it that much, only when he wants to, not when he has to. So you watch that game, and they kind of got beat up, and you're watching them, and you're feeling that kind of slipping away from them. And I'm with you. The offensive line does not look good. They've lost a couple players over the years. Stanley's huge. He's an incredible player. Brown switches sides. I can tell you from experience, like we've talked about off the air, I've seen DJ Fluker live and in color. He was drafted by my Chargers. So, you know, there's a guard playing tackle, a right tackle playing left tackle. They had some injuries up front with their defensive tackles. They're well behind Pittsburgh, not only in the race, but right now watching them, you can feel they're well behind them, it feels like, with their mojo and their momentum. They don't look right.
No, they don't, and I believe they will get some help defensively. It's not as bleak as some of these season-ending injuries on the offensive side of the ball. Oh, but Vinny, you're a coach guy. I'm a coach's guy as well. So when you look at the landscape of what's happening, does this affect Greg Roman at all? because now it's the year three Blues, and I think it's something, there's really something to it. I mean, it takes the league typically a season or two to figure out what you're doing. I don't know if Greg Roman can get any more creative as to what he already has with this Ravens offense to fix it. You mentioned Lamar Jackson last year. His deficiencies were masked by the ability of the offensive line. He doesn't have that this year. I just don't know if Greg Roman can fix this issue.
And, you know, that's a great point. We brought this up with, you know, we've talked about this in the past, and we had this issue. He's had this issue where it started in San Francisco. You know, year three, same thing. Kaepernick took off 1 year, and you know, we had that discussion like we seem to always have where the media just throws it in. Here's the next great quarterback, or here's somebody changing the game. Well, that fizzled out. And I think the next stop for Greg Roman was Buffalo. Tyrod Taylor won a playoff game. Yeah, fizzled out. Yeah, he comes over to Baltimore. You know, Joe Flacco didn't start well, so here comes Lamar Jackson. Next, you know, last year he's league MVP. Here we go. Next great quarterback. We're seeing it fizzles out. And, you know, some of these things are, the point is, running as a quarterback is great. We've talked about this many times. Hey, a running quarterback does help. But, you know, to win in the NFL comes down to you have to stand in the pocket. And you have to throw the ball down the field and beat a blitz or read the defense and make those throws. And right now, that's not his strength. Let's be honest. Lamar Jackson, if he throws it when he wants, a play action, he's wonderful. If he's in the pocket throwing it more than 25 times a game, what do we see? We see that team struggle. And you're right. Greg Roman running the ball, getting creative. Teams are catching that. And when your O-line is below par, well, guess what? Your strength becomes a weakness. And you got a real problem.
There's no doubt.
We'll see. We'll see. You know, hey, Harbaugh's a great coach. He doesn't get a lot of credit where, you know, compared to a lot of coaches in the NFL. And Harbaugh's a great coach. And, you know, he's an old special teams coach. So that's one area that they're going to have to, you know, maybe improve in the return game. Great kickers, right? One of the greatest kickers of all time, maybe. So there are some things there. Baltimore's not, it's not as bleak as, you know, maybe we're making it sound. But there's some real weaknesses they've got to figure out. And Greg Roman's going to have to figure out a way to throw the ball down the field with Lamar Jackson to back people up and then help that running game because the O-line is not a strength anymore.
Vinny, you talk about quarterbacks and rolling out of the pocket, being able to throw inside the pocket, being able to beat the blitz. One quarterback that has been able to do that so far this year, it's Kyler Murray. And once again, we saw some Murray magic on Sunday. I thought the Buffalo-Arizona game was over with. I had actually turned the channel, and then we get a game break, and Murray throws just a Hail Mary coming down with it. It's DeAndre Hopkins. It's a connection that's worked. And all in all, when you look at this Arizona team, is it time to finally take them serious? I mean, what they're doing offensively is spectacular. We knew that Cliff Kingsbury, this is an offensive guru. He brings in Tom Clements, who's a pass game coordinator, whatever that title means. He's got some help. There's a lot of experience as far as the coaching staff is concerned, and this team just continues to find ways to win. And that victory over Buffalo on Sunday, that's monumental.
Oh, it is, absolutely. A lot of momentum going into that. You know, that game was over. Buffalo had made their game-winning drive and secured it, and the game was over. I got up. I got up. I was at my dad's house, and I got up, same thing as you, Jordan. I got up, and I was like, oh, this is over. And then my brother screams, hey, dude, they just scored. And I'm like, what? So I had to run in and check it out. And Murray's got a little mojo going, right? He's running around. He's got a little Doug Flutie in him, you know, a small guy. I wasn't a believer, so I'm about to eat a little crow here. It keeps us up. You know, I was thinking that, you know, the NFL wasn't his spot, but he's making it work. And credit, like you said, to the offensive staff for playing to his strengths and him running around, getting in space. They're doing some stuff there, and Arizona's got a little mojo. They're starting to believe. They're starting to believe. And that's a powerful thing, Jordan. That's a powerful thing. So, again, we're a year and a half into Cliff Kingsbury. It looks like he's got it rolling right now offensively. We'll see this team, you know, are they for real? Well, we'll find out shortly when they go into their division run again. Two games against L.A. We'll see how they match up there. But I kind of like what they're doing, right? I kind of like what they're doing. Again, they're bringing a little college game into the NFL. And it looks like they're ahead of the curve and – how about DeAndre Hopkins? Is that the best offseason move in years?
Yeah, well, look, if you talk Hopkins, we can stick with the game in Buffalo, and we have to talk about Stephon Diggs as well. I think when you look at what both of these teams gave up, to acquire these two players. Both have worked out tremendously. And we can't sleep on Buffalo. 7-3. They've had a tough schedule. I mean, the NFC West, we talk about that being the most difficult division in football. Well, they beat the Rams. They beat the Seahawks. They should have beat the Cardinals. That tells me something. You know, you can look at a loss to Tennessee. You can look at a loss to Kansas City, whatever. But when you perform the way they have against the toughest division in football, I think it speaks volumes, right? So when you look at Hopkins, when you look at Diggs, there's no doubt, there's no question they did not give up too much to acquire these two guys because they've been game changers.
No, they've been incredible, and they've helped their young quarterbacks go from looking good to really looking good. Because Josh Allen, you can see the arm talent, but he was just missing something. Looks like Diggs is just what he was missing. Same thing with Hopkins. He's made Murray, you know, he's changed their entire offense. And do I believe Murray would have this much success without Hopkins? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Fitzgerald's a Hall of Famer, one of the greatest receivers ever. But he's past his prime, let's be honest. Yeah, you know, teams are having to pay attention to Hopkins, which opens up Christian Kirk, who's doing a lot better now. That opens up what? Larry Fitzgerald. He's the third receiver on your team. They're rolling people over towards Hopkins. It's opening things up. When they double cover Hopkins, guess what? That's one more man not in the box for Murray to run around against. So do I think the Cardinals are even close to this competitive without Hopkins? No, I really don't, Jordan. I think he changed their entire offense. Diggs added to Buffalo because they want to run the ball and, you know, kind of different styles, you know what I mean? More of a pro base, more of a tough weather kind of built team in Buffalo. Arizona wanted to become a college team, a spread it out kind of team, and Hopkins has made that possible. So I think he, both of them have been incredible, but I really think Hopkins changed the entire franchise because that's kind of where they wanted to go, and he was the piece to do it. And, you know, kudos to both those quarterbacks and both those receivers. You're right. Great point. But, yeah, Hopkins, he's been incredible. Incredible.
We've talked about success. I want to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the struggles. Are there any coaches on the hot seat as we move into Week 11? Who are some names that probably should worry about their job? We'll talk about that when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Football Tuesday here on Drive Time Sports. Moving into Week 11. Thursday night, love the matchup. Arizona and Seattle will be right here on KOAL. Two teams that are battling for the playoffs. Seattle's lost two straight. Russell Wilson typically very good when attempting to recover from a loss, much less back-to-back losses. Arizona, on the flip side, they just have a lot of good juju on their side at the moment. As we move into Week 11, I want to talk not so much about the great teams, but the bad teams. Coaches. Coaches on the hot seat. I mean, I've been telling you for weeks that Anthony Lynn has to go in Los Angeles. The Chargers have to make a move. It looks like the Jets, even being 0-9, they're going to hang on to Adam Gase for the rest of the season. At least that's what it appears. When you take a look around the league, who's on the hot seat in your mind? Who's the first coach to go?
Well, I think you're right. The two that you mentioned, one that's not getting a lot of publicity, but I think it's really hot too, is Doug Peterson. And people are like, "What are you, crazy? He just won a Super Bowl." That team looks bad. They're a mess now. They've done some front office shuffling here in the recent past, but they don't look good. They don't. When you pay all your money to your superstar quarterback and he starts going backwards, well, the coach, who was an offensive guru and a backup quarterback in the NFL, he's going to get the blame for that. So Doug Peterson's a name to watch. I think he's in real trouble. Gase and Aylin, I think Gase is gone no matter what. I think, you know, what do they call it, Black Monday in the circles. As soon as the season's done, that Monday you start seeing people get cut and fired and those things. I think Gase is done. Anthony Lynn's interesting. I think Anthony Lynn makes it to the end of the year. If he turns it around, I think he stays. I think there'll be change there. But if he goes on a run and gets 4 out of 5, I don't think he gets fired. If they don't go on a run, Jordan, he should be real worried. So those are three for sure. But, you know, it's a tough business. It's a tough business. Houston's got an interim coach already. What happened in Houston? You know, there's reports that Romeo is going to be interviewed for a job. Do I think Romeo's, you know, a real candidate there? No. No, do you? Do you think Romeo Crennel's the guy to turn around Houston?
No. We know who the coach in Houston is going to be. We know this. It's Eric Bieniemy. He's got to be the guy.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's talk all over about Bieniemy right now. He's got some, you know, a name. Let's be honest. You know, a guy that's had some success. We were hard on, but looking at this logically, you know. How about Jason Garrett? Does Jason Garrett get another shot as a head coach without Jerry Jones meddling, a team with a good behind-the-scenes owner, a good general manager? Does Jason Garrett get an interview this offseason? You know, he's had some success. He did win a couple playoff games, and, you know, that's not a normal job. You can't compare Dallas to a lot of franchises. So does he get another shot? That's interesting. What happens in Atlanta? Raheem Morris seems to have, you know, maybe got them over the hump. They won a couple games, but, you know, they were ahead in three of those games they already should have won. So that's an interesting, you know, considering how he really didn't do well in Tampa. Did he get a second shot as a head coach after this interim job? But I think we know for sure Adam Gase won't be there on a Monday. I don't believe Romeo Crennel will be there. And I don't think Raheem Morris is going to be a real candidate, honestly. But We'll see.
Let me throw another name out there to you. What about Byron Leftwich? I honestly think he's going to get some pub. He's going to get an interview. I don't think there's any doubt he's going to get an interview.
Byron Leftwich is going to get an interview, and he's got some real mojo behind him. He's got some real weight with him because, you know, I know you're not a BA guy, Jordan, and I am, but BA has been around the league a long time, has a lot of friends, knows a lot of people. So when they call for a reference, you know those are big words. Tom Brady is probably going to be a cheerleader for Byron Leftwich. So those are guys that, you know, when people call around asking, he's going to get good reviews. And he's going to get a chance to interview. And that's your time to shine when you get into that interview. Because with a guy with no previous head coaching experience, the interview's all you have. That's a great point that you make, though, Jordan. That's a hot name to watch.
It is. It is, especially when you look at the success that Tampa Bay has had, really outside of one game where they just completely abandoned the run. Look, they go back to it. They go back to it early and often. Ronald Jones breaks the century mark. I know he had one long run, but still, look at the success that Tampa Bay had. It was a learning experience for Leftwich, let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. He's called plays. Now he's been with different guys. So, you know, there's one that, there's a name right there. That's one of them hot young assistants. Eric Bieniemy is going to get a lot of buzz. You know that. Defensively, how about the guy down in Miami? Josh Boyer, I believe, is his name. How about Miami? He's got five in a row, and they're doing it without a great offense. You know, Tua's played solid, but Tua is not winning those football games for them. They're playing with phenomenal defense, great special teams. There's a name right there.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Boyer down there in Miami, Brian Flores has been incredible. I mean, and just been awesome down there. So there's a defensive name to go with. What about this name, Jordan? Let's throw this out. What about Cincinnati? You know, Zach Taylor's going to be in. He's going to go through year two. He's going to finish year two with probably, six wins in 2 years. Does he get a third? Does Joe Burrow switch it up? Does that change? Cincinnati's been known to be patient with their coaches, obviously. They should have fired Marvin Lewis probably 5 years before they did. Let me ask you, do you think he's on the hot seat?
I don't, and the reason I say no there is because when I look at Cincinnati, it's a similar situation to what happened in, let's say, Arizona, right? Murray was Kingsbury's guy. We knew this. When you hired Zach Taylor last season, you had to have hired him knowing that this is going to be a guy that develops a quarterback. He's a quarterback coach. That's his bread and butter. And you knew it wasn't going to be Andy Dalton. And so I believe that finally you had... Joe Burrow's been good this year, by the way. You can't say enough good things about Joe Burrow.
He's been awesome. Yeah,
he has. And I think you have to give Zach Taylor credit for that. And you also have to look at the connection that he has with T. Higgins. So in my mind, no, I think Zach Taylor is very, very safe because you had to have hired this guy knowing that he was going to groom the next franchise quarterback. And you didn't have that in year one.
That's a great point. And again, Cincinnati's been famous for being hanging on to coaches too long. You know, they're very patient. Matt Patricia's one that should probably be a little worried right now in Detroit. You know, we were excited about Matty P, and he's disappointed up there. So that seems pretty hot. If they drop three of the last four or something like that, do you believe he's gone? I do.
I do too. Yeah, I do too.
But, you know, if they go on a run, again, what they went for the last five, it kind of changes your speed on that. I think Doug Marrone's gone in Jacksonville. I think he's going to join Adam Gase that first Monday. He's out. I think they're going to rebuild that. Probably have a chance, if not Trevor Lawrence. They got a chance with one of the other quarterbacks they like, whether it be Trey Lance, Justin Fields. I don't believe their new coach is going to ride with Gardner Minshew. That's an interesting situation down there. I think Doug Marrone's on the hot seat, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be out at the end of the year. So that's another name. That's another franchise to look at. Vic Fangio, there's another one. Jordan, how hot do you think Vic Fangio's seat is right now? And let's add to that, how hot do you think John Elway's seat is right now?
It's boiling. It's boiling. Has been for a couple of seasons now. It has. It was all riding on Drew Locke. Let's be real. It was all riding on Drew Locke.
And, you know, he had a nice little run there two quarters against Atlanta and L.A., against those defenses that are beat up and not very good. He had a couple nice little runs in the fourth quarter. But then this week, what's he throw? Four interceptions against the Raiders in a division game that they need. So Vic Fangio looks like he could be on his way out. And in a way, should be. Let's be honest, Jordan. He should be. You know, other than Peyton Manning, I mean, what really have they done there?
Yeah, it hasn't worked. I mean, I gave Elway a lot of credit for going to the Super Bowl one season with an offensive identity and in 2 years getting back to the Super Bowl with a defensive identity and winning it. But unfortunately, it's a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately deal. And since that Super Bowl championship where Peyton Manning was awful and Brock Osweiler was awful, and the only great move, there's been one great move that John Elway has made over the last 4 or 5 years. Correct me if I'm wrong here. That was not signing Brock Osweiler to an $80 million contract.
You're exactly right. That's a great point. And, you know, the second, you know, he inherited most of that defense, you know, Von Miller basically single-handedly won that Super Bowl for him. He was already there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was already there. I think his seat should be boiling. I don't see how Vic Fangio gets another year. I really don't. And if he does, you'd have to have a general manager that's really patient and a defensive-minded kind of guy. Denver's not used to losing. They're pretty proud of themselves. You know, Denver fans are pretty vocal and they're pretty high in themselves. So, you know, this run that they've been on, they're not used to this. So I think Elway's, you know, even though he's a legend there, he's probably on his way out. His best identity would probably be to resign or move on to another job in that organization. Yeah, I think that's another hot seat in the same division as Anthony Lynn. Anthony Lynn, I think his seat's pretty hot. I think you're right, Jordan. But there's going to be a lot of them. I could say, how many are you guessing? Let's be honest. Come Black Monday, that you know, the first Monday after the season, I'm going to say 8 jobs open.
Yeah, between 6 and 8. I'm going to say between 6 and 8. I think it's going to be a pretty heavy Black Monday. 6 and 8.
Yeah, I think 6 or 8 jobs are going to be open. And then you're looking for guys to fill them. You're looking for guys to fill them. Here's the name. And Matt Nagy. How about Matt Nagy? That offense is terrible in Chicago.
Should be another
one.
That's
why they hired him.
Yep. Yeah, Matt Nagy. Look, two offensive guys in the head coaching positions right now. Nagy in Chicago, and you have Adam Gase in New York, and they rank second to worst and worst in every major statistical category for offense. And these guys were brought in to build an offense.
Yeah, specifically for offense. And then you look on the other side of the ball there, Chuck Pagano, that defense looks incredible. And here's a guy who had a lot of success in Indianapolis dealing with a sickness and everything else. Does Chuck Pagano get another run at this? They look at this and say, hey, let's give him another shot with a pretty good team and see where that gets us. He may have thrown his name into the head coaching ring again because he's had success, Jordan. He made the playoffs with a young Indianapolis team. And, you know, Andrew Luck helps. But that was a young football team that they built up. They were pretty awful when he got there, and he turned that around pretty good. So does he get another chance at this?
Yeah. Lot to still talk about. Vinny, miss you in the studio. Plenty of NFL talk to be had in the next couple of weeks. I look forward to next Football Tuesday. We'll get you back in the studio. I appreciate you taking out the time today.
Always, buddy. Always love it.
We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskering on KOAL 750 AM.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
I know it's Football Tuesday, but on the eve of the NBA draft, we have to talk NBA basketball because the storylines just create themselves, and I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this edition of the show. It's now being reported from multiple outlets, multiple individuals, the Houston Rockets may in fact move Russell Westbrook after all. I think this is ironic, Travis. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the worst contracts in basketball, the most unmovable contracts in the NBA, and we always go back to two, Russell Westbrook and John Wall. And according to Shams, who is just fantastic, he rivals Woj as far as breaking NBA news, he has said that the Rockets and the Wizards have discussed a deal that would involve Russell Westbrook being dealt for John Wall. I knew the contracts were pretty equally bad. I go back and I look at it. In fact, Houston would save about $300,000 this year because John Wall scheduled to make 38.1, Westbrook 38.5. Yeah, that's probably the only way either one of these deals get moved, if they are moved for one another. And that may actually happen.
Yeah, it's a lateral move. I mean, does it really make sense for either one of them at that point?
Well, I'll say this. Okay, let's look at it from Washington's perspective.
Because you're gonna tick off a guy in Bradley Beal if you do that.
You think? Because I don't know that we don't know what he looks like now. He's coming off of one of the most excruciating injuries that an NBA player can endure, and that's a torn Achilles. Especially for a player that relies on athleticism. We've seen this a million times. So we don't know what John Wall looks like. Bradley Beal can what? Shoot the basketball. Russell Westbrook cannot shoot the basketball. He relies on his athleticism. I almost think this trade works for both. And it's not a cop-out when I say that. And I'll get your perspective on this in just a moment. However, Houston wants more assets in return than just John Wall, be it another draft pick or whatever have you. Here's why I think it works for both sides. Nobody knows the John Wall situation better than Washington.
They got the medicals.
Yep. They have the medicals. Nobody knows it better than them. They're looking at this, and they know that Bradley Beal could be on his way out next season. You've got to try something. You have to. And if they feel that Russell Westbrook is going to be a better match for Bradley Beal out of the backcourt with his athleticism, they have to roll the dice because neither contract is good. And honestly, this may be their lone chance to move John Wall's contract. Now, I'm going to look at this from Houston's perspective as well. This is a total rebuild. They've already shipped out Robert Covington. He's on his way to Portland. They're going to trade James Harden. It's just a matter of time.
They're
going to
trade Tucker, Austin Rivers. Those guys aren't coming back.
It's a complete rebuild, right? No more Daryl Morey. There's no more Mike D'Antoni. It's a complete rebuild in Houston. You know what you have in Russell Westbrook, and it didn't work, and you can't build a team around Russell Westbrook, and he would be the final piece to move on from that 2019-2020 squad. Wouldn't you just take the possible upside of John Wall? Maybe John Wall comes back from this Achilles injury. He's young enough. Maybe he resembles his former self, and you got a decent piece. Isn't it worth the risk?
Yeah, it's worth it if you just want to get rid of Russell Westbrook and the headache that comes with it. But for me, I think it's just a lateral move. I don't think either one gains anything by it. But if you're Washington and you want to try to get rid of, like you say, that contract of John Wall, this should probably be your best bet. And then you can later on, I guess, in a year, find somebody that's dumb enough to take Russell Westbrook off your hands.
You won't be able to.
And you won't, but yeah. But
because, again, you got to look at the long-term ramifications of this of their deals. Okay, Westbrook is going to make 41.3 this next year. He's going to make 44.2 the year after that, and he's got a player option for 47 in 2022. He's not going to decline that. And John Wall, it's almost identical, 41, 44, and 47. So the only way you're moving these deals is come 2022 when both exercise that player option, because there's no way they're going to decline that. They would be insane to do so. That's the only time you'll have a chance to move these deals. Maybe, just maybe, you can move what would be, I don't know, $91 million in 2021, maybe, with 2 years remaining. I highly doubt it. But if you don't work out a deal, if Houston and Washington cannot work out a deal, I don't see John Wall or Russell Westbrook being moved
within the next 2 years. I think this is your
probably
one chance.
Finish their careers where they're at, and you can't move it now. Their last contract, big contract, is going to be with the team that they're at.
Their last big contract. Yeah. I agree with you there. Yeah. Yeah. And so, again, I thought that both these deals were unmovable. I never in my wildest dreams would have thought these two teams would get together and figure out a way to swap horrible contract for horrible contract. I will tell you this much. When Washington signed John Wall to that deal, it was inflated. There's no question they overpaid him. But that deal made more sense than the deal that Russell Westbrook got. At the time, before John Wall's Achilles injury, that deal made more sense to me than what Russell Westbrook got.
No, I'm with you. I agree. It's just you never know what's going to happen in this league. Like you said, it's a matter of time before Harden is moved to Brooklyn.
It's almost a done deal.
That's done. So for Houston, you have to get rid of Westbrook now. And you might have found your team with Washington. So Washington's got to have, what, sweeten the pot? They want more assets. What, do they want a draft pick?
Throw a draft pick in if that's what it's going to take.
And get rid of it.
I will say this, and again, I try to stray away from political talk, but Rick Bucher said that part of the reason that James Harden no longer wants to play for the Rockets is because Tillman Fertitta, the new owner, is a Donald Trump supporter. I refuse to believe that. If James Harden has said that, that is a massive cop-out.
Yeah.
It's convenient outrage because this team is going in a direction that you don't necessarily agree with. For instance, he turned down an opportunity to be the first $50 million a year player, right? It's convenient outrage. And eventually this type of talk between players and owners and, well, I don't like who you support politically, it all seems to go back to Donald Trump, and that's going to end here relatively soon, within the next couple of months. And so, convenient outrage, and I don't buy it for a second. James Harden does not want to be a part of the Houston Rockets because of the direction that they are going, and he knows he has a better chance to win in Brooklyn. Do not try to make this political.
He has no chance to win in Houston. None.
He has none, and he knows it. And he knows it. But in this current climate, it's very convenient to say, he supports this guy, I don't like that guy, so that's why I don't want to play for him. I don't buy it for a second. Out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports, East Travis Anderson. I want to thank Vinny Rondinelli. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. We'll be joined by USU Eastern basketball coach Bill Evans. That'll be here on Drive Time Sports tomorrow. Plus, we'll preview the NBA draft. Be safe. I am out.